Well, today is October 9th, and we're back again as the Expanded Budget Committee of Tompkins County to begin actually discussing amendments to the budget, the tentative budget that's been, I should say, the recommended budget that's been given to us by our county administrator. We have special rules for this evening, and any motions only take a majority. If we have an amendment on the floor to a motion, it can be amended, but no further than that. But don't despair if you have an amendment to an amendment to an amendment. You can always come back later with a different kind of motion that is similar to the first one. We're pretty lenient about those kinds of things. There is no time specified for this evening except the beginning time. I'd like to try to be done in 2 hours. We have a meeting tomorrow night, and if we need a third meeting, we have one. What? I forgot the date. Already forgot it. I think the last 2 years we've been out of here in 2 nights. But who knows? There's a lot of amendments here tonight, and we may or may not get through them. There are, first off, a number of housekeeping amendments that Kevin McGuire has asked us to consider, which have basically take care of changes to the recommended budget that have occurred since it was brought forth in early September by the county administrator. He has suggested, and I thought it was a good idea, to take them all as a unit on one motion, but if you want to take them separately, I'm glad to do that. I wondered if you had opinions about that. They are the amendments 1 through 6 on your most recently updated proposed amendment sheet, and this is the one showing the time as 5:02 p.m., and so that was as of a few minutes ago. So what's your pleasure? Shall we do them all at once, or okay. Martha?
Well, I just, to make sure for transparency, to explain each one of them so the public knows what we're doing.
Sure. Can Kevin or can we have Jason give us a brief synopsis of this? We're talking items 1 through 6.
Thank you, Mike. Item 1 is the increase in the recommended budget necessary to cover the recent RFP for homeless services for 2019. It adds $304,888 to the 2019 budget and levy.
We've had a lot of discussion about that.
Number 2 is essentially a budget-neutral adjustment to the pass-through dollars for Raise the Age that are in the Department of Social Services budget. Both expenses and revenues would be reduced by
$335,872. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So, Kevin, is that like the whole amount that we put in there?
It's not the whole amount, no. I couldn't tell you right off the top of my head. That was an adjustment sent to me by Tom Herden from DSS upon learning more from the state about the actual costs.
So Social Services is comfortable with this number?
They sent it to me, and yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Rich?
I thought the original number was $1.65 million. So this is a reduction from that. Is that right?
That sounds right.
Something similar to that. We'd have to get back to you what the exact amount was.
But it's affecting that number?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah. RTA's in several buckets.
Amendment number 3 of the housekeeping amendments was a adjustment made to the unallocated fringes that are in the recommended budget to reflect the savings in health insurance premium growth after the consortium announced that their rate for 2019 for premium growth would be 5% instead of 6%. That's a savings we're able to take off of the, essentially off the levy. A similar one is a slighter, smaller reduction, but still significant, based on a slight modification in the New York State's pension rates. And that was recently affirmed by our calculation and quick reprojection. We had to prepare the 2018 pension bill, and it came in right where we were expecting, so we have confidence in our projections for 2019. Finally, there are two housekeeping amendments to zero out essentially budget OTRs that were in the recommended budget but which have been withdrawn by the folks who submitted them. So Tompkins County Public Library has withdrawn the OTR that was titled Removing Barriers to Access. So that's $40,000 less in one time that's being requested. And the TST BOCES withdrew the request for a school resource officer, and so that's reducing the budget by $24,093 in one-time expenditures.
Mike. Ann?
I saw that Annette Birdzall is here, and I know at some point she wanted to say about why the one for the library was taken out.
Well, then let's do this like a consent agenda. Let's pull that one off and come back to it. Martha?
So do you want a motion to accept those other five?
The other five, yes.
So moved.
Seconded by Glenn. Any further discussion on those five adjustments? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right, now let's go to the housekeeping one for the library. Who wants to move that, Amanda? Who wants to second it? Anna? All right. Annette, come to the microphone and talk to us about it.
Hi. I just wanted to make sure that you know that the library is still committed to removing barriers to access, and we're grateful for all your support. We learned some obstacles about the locations. We had proposed four of the book drops, and there's concern about liability and insurance questions, and before we accept funding, we want to make sure we can be completely successful and able to carry out the project as planned. So I hope we'll be back next year, but that's why we're withdrawing it now. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else on this? Ready to vote? Those in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. I had intended to go right down the list, but I know we have some folks here that are waiting. I know we have some of the PC3. What's your pleasure? To go down the list, or do you want to bring some of the folks up first?
Bring them up.
Right. Kevin, what's the number for TC3?
It's number 18, Mike.
18, isn't it? Yep. Okay. A little awkward for me as chair to move it. Can I ask the vice chair of budget to move it? She's not here, is she? One of the other members, Glenn? Glenn will move it. Is there a second? Seconded by Dave. This is $110,000, multi-year. It's a two-year proposal. Blixey Ketch is here. Blixey, do you want to talk a little bit about this? It's fairly new to this group. We have looked at the papers that came in.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for actually moving me up on your agenda. I really appreciate that. And thank you so much for...
Could you get a little closer to the mic, Blixey?
Oh, sorry. Thanks. Is that better? Okay. Thanks so much for considering our request for additional funding. You all have the proposal and hopefully have had a chance to look it over, but we are desperately in need of a new basically business analytics system for our campus, and it's become very critical that we have good data and make good data-driven decisions. And the system we're using now just isn't really meeting our needs anymore, and it's going to be sunsetting, and so we really have to move forward with this project, which is resource intensive, particularly in the first year, but also in year two. So I'm happy to answer any questions anyone has, and I don't want to go into more gory detail than you want to know, but I'm happy to speak further about any of the aspects of that and the budget we've proposed.
Martha, then I have a question.
Yeah, I'm not sure I've seen the paperwork, but is this staffing as well as software? Or?
Yes. So in year one, we've already been examining different software solutions that would be good for higher education in a community college like ours, looking at what other folks are doing. But we really are looking to look at purchasing a software, but also a consultant to help us implement that. And an aspect of implementing this system is going to be creating a comprehensive data warehouse that goes with it. And in that, we're looking at some temporary staffing, possibly an intern-based program, maybe a graduate-level student who would really do work to bridge between technology and data, really someone who would walk in both worlds in campus tech and institutional research. And year two is a phase-in of additional software that we feel we're going to need in order to fully implement the kinds of reporting and data analytics we need that would really push it out to more staff around the campus so that people could be just more informed on a regular basis about the effectiveness of what we're doing. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you very much.
I wanted to ask you, Blixey, does this take pressure off your budget? I know you're having another difficult year this year.
We are having another difficult year, and it is going to be an extreme challenge for us to move forward with this project without additional resources. And it's also extremely critical. So we would have to be – we already are making difficult choices, and this funding would help us out tremendously with some of those choices.
Anna?
So the data that you're collecting, are these analytics about the student? I'm trying to figure out exactly what it is. And also, what have you been doing what have you been doing previously?
Sure.
How will this help? I know that you've had an enrollment decrease. Is this also hopefully going to impact that because you'll understand your students better? Can you give us?
Yep, all of those things. But let me think about the various questions you just asked. So we have been using a system that called Salient, which is somewhat of a data warehouse where we're analyzing mostly student data, some financial data as well, but mostly student data. It isn't really user-friendly, so it's been really hard to push it out to faculty and others to make it a really useful tool, and it has limitations. It really wasn't a higher ed tool, and I think this company was looking to get into the higher ed market, and that wasn't successful. So we're essentially their only higher ed client, and that is not going well in terms of future development. So a lot has happened since we've been using this system in higher ed tools that have really surpassed, I think, where we're at. And so we really are looking forward to taking all of our student data elements, all of our financial elements, even outside data, and really combining it to provide really good analytics about who our students are, maybe who we're not reaching, potentially, but also how do we help our students be successful? So how would we know someone's high risk when they're walking in the door? I mean, I think we know that instinctively, but what is a really good, consistent, accurate data solution to making sure that we do that well? And then how do we know what we're doing is working to help those people be successful? So those are the things we're looking for this software and process to inform. I don't know if I actually answered all your questions, but...
Yes.
Okay.
Deborah.
Thank you, Blixey. Yes. I just want to be sure I understand this. It's a multi-year... It's a three-year...
Two-year.
Two-year.
Yes.
Okay. So it's a total of 190.
Yeah, so in year one is really when we're going to be primarily working with a consultant, selecting the software, building our data warehouse, looking at, you know, hiring that temporary staff, and that's really a one-year assignment. In year two, the software costs relate to additional software that we think we're going to need to attach to our student information system to make communication and reporting and enhance what we're doing with students, basically. So it's really sort of a two-phase thing. And I wish I could be more specific about the software, but because we're still investigating it, I'm not 100% sure yet what we're going to go with. We're looking at a variety of options. But one of the things we're looking at is machine learning and actual predictive analytics. And that would be more in year two, some of that work that we'd be doing to really have software help us make better decisions and sort of tell us what we might predict from what we see now. I don't know if that... I'm not a tech person, so I'm trying really hard to explain that, but I am working as a team with our associate provost and our chief information officer. The three of us actually work together to put this proposal together.
Anne?
Lexi, I had some very intense technical questions that I wanted to ask you.
Excellent.
Now, I'm kidding. Deborah actually just asked the question I was going to ask. So.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, you're done?
Yeah.
Henry.
You said that you're going to be looking at various things of software. Do you know whether this company has worked with other colleges before, and yep. what's the array? I mean, what services do they offer?
So again, I'm not sure that we haven't necessarily picked a company yet, right?
Oh.
We're looking at this, but some that we're looking at, one is a software called Tableau. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that, but that's more of your visualization software and could be used by faculty to be able to really see visually what's going on with their programs and their students. But there's another software, and if I remember the name correctly, it's called Argos eVisions or something like that, that actually is aligned with our student information system, which is very specific to schools that use our student information system where we store all our student data. So, but we are also looking at other Microsoft products potentially for business intelligence and predictive analytics and machine learning. And again, I don't know that we've come down on a certainty on these things because there are a few options out there, but we are looking at a lot of other institutions who have implemented similar things to see what's working best for people.
And that's where you get the estimate on the pricing?
Yes, and that's where we came up with the estimate on the pricing was what we've looked at with those two pieces of software. Year one is the Tableau piece, that visualization piece, which is probably what we need most right away. And then year two is more of that digging in deeper piece. For example, I would really like to have software that truly aligns all of our financial data with all of our educational activity. And, you know, we do lots of costing analysis, but wouldn't it be awesome if I could know exactly what each course costs and what every program costs and have it done in an automated way and really marry those pieces of data together. And so it's really about taking data that sits in discrete systems and really getting it to work together to come up with some helpful information for decision making.
And how long have you had the current system?
Well, Salient, we've had, boy, I'm thinking 10 years. I'm struggling with my memory, but I was there when we first implemented it, so I'm thinking it's been about 10 years. And we've done a lot of work to try to do that, but we've never quite gotten where we wanted to be. And so we just need to get to that next level of being more effective and efficient with how we're looking at data.
Okay, Rich?
Mike, I just wanted to say thank you for bringing this forward. This seems like a sensible thing that will help with not only enrollment but retention, is my understanding. I will support.
And for the folks at home, just remember, everyone, that there in this year's TC3 budget, there is no sponsorship increase. There's no 2% like we have for all of our other agencies, for example, because Cortland did not want to be able to do that this year. So let's keep that in mind when we're thinking about this. Deborah?
I hate to be a party pooper, but I'm just curious. Henry, you still teach at TC3, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So does he have to recuse himself or? Yeah, I'm just. I hate to be a pooper,
but. I think so. We've gone through that with folks that worked at Cornell, and Jonathan has always opined that they did not have to unless it directly affected their salary or something like that.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead, Henry, vote.
Are you ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous. Oh, I'm sorry. Shauna Black is opposed. So that still carries.
Thank you so
much.
Thank
you for coming, Blixie. Annette, I don't think there's anything other than that withdrawal. Does anyone else have any budget amendments with respect to the library tonight? I don't think there are. All right. Let's see, who else is here? Looks like OAR is here, Deborah Dietrich. What have we got for Deborah tonight?
Number 10.
Number 10, top of the page.
There's
top of page two.
Number 10 and number 22.
This would need a motion by either Shauna, Anna, or Ann Corman. Moved by Ann, seconded by Shauna.
Which one?
I'm at number 10. Is there another one? I'm sorry.
There's 22.
Well, let's do 10. They aren't right next to each other, are they? Okay. So, number 10 is changes recommended to the OTR for parolee housing case manager from one time to target funding, $50,000 becoming no longer one time but target. Discussion.
Question?
Rich?
Just for clarity, it is in the current budget as one-time funding. Is that correct?
Yes.
Jason?
That's correct. Yep.
Anna?
I'd love to hear from Deb a bit about the experience that you had, the expectations you had when you put the Endeavor House together, and the actual experience that you've had with respect to the staff time needed to really make it successful.
Well, I think I was really naive when we put together Endeavor House and thought that the hard part was going to be building it. That was really pretty easy compared to the day-to-day management. Though we are making it work, and so are the residents. Each of us have a caseload. We are case manager for a resident at the house. That also entails weekly meetings with the resident, helping them put together a plan for transitioning, helping with employment, not very successfully helping them move on to other housing so far, but that is part of the plan, making sure things are working well with any treatment plan they might have. But in addition, over the last 4 years, we've really done more and more housing search and placement and applications with our clients, because we see that the biggest impediment to successful reentry in this community is the lack of affordable housing. So each client service worker and everyone takes on a piece of doing the coordinated assessment tool with everyone who walks through our door, helping them fill out the forms for various housing. Then, parolees. We've always worked with parolees, but not in a really very official capacity. We worked with them because they had been our clients before they went upstate. Most of them were incarcerated at the Tompkins County Jail and then fell into our service arena. And then they'd come home from state prison and they'd come into OAR's office and we'd help them to the degree we could. But a year ago, we were hopeful about receiving DCJS funding along with Challenge Industries and the Rescue Mission and doing a more concerted case management with parolees. That money, that grant did not work. I'll just be very blunt that it was very, very time consuming. It was the cost benefit just didn't make any sense, and it was very rigid. It was really developed for more downstate counties where there was an intake any week of 50 to 70 parolees, not 50 to 70 per year, and it was very prescriptive. However, we didn't want to just walk away from the work we'd started to do with parolees because we'd seen fruit being born from that work. With parolees having employment, more likely. And so we've been cultivating that. So this is a combination of two needs, both of which have been there but have not been as concerted an effort on the part of OAR as they have been the last 2 years. So it's housing and parole case management. This year we've dealt with, let me check my numbers. I think we have 49 parolees we've worked with, which is not just meeting with someone, but it's all meeting with them on a regular basis, having them check in and follow up with employment and housing issues. And three of our current Endeavor House residents are parolees as well.
So two quick follow-ups. One is this work was added on to your existing workload. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And then the second one is what is the success rate of the people with respect to recidivism?
It's early days yet, actually, because this just went into place. Oh, last December we started doing the work. And but I will say that we've had one parolee that we've worked very closely with who also lived in Endeavor House who has returned to incarceration. I can get you more specific numbers, but it's surprisingly fewer than we anticipated, partly because there is very little community connection for parolees returning home. The parole officer is their major entry point. The parole officer has an enforcement role, which is an important role, but it's quite different from case management. It's quite different from being there when somebody's hitting a rough patch, having them come in, talk it through, meet with their employer, and see if there are things we can do to facilitate their successful continuance in that job. So I think that we're unique in Tompkins as far as case management and a sense of community for parolees.
Rich?
I support the position. It makes great sense to me. I support Endeavor House. Thank you. I'm just curious why we would go to Target on this. I would certainly agree to, say, a three-year one-time so we could support hiring. But for the members of the legislature that are saying we should move this to Target, I guess I'd like to hear your reasoning. I'd feel much more comfortable if we were seeing it come back so we could watch it.
Shauna?
The thought behind moving it to Target was actually based on the fact that there's never going to be a time when we don't need this position. In the foreseeable future, we're going to need this position. The programs that OAR has rolled out have been highly effective, such as the College Initiative program. Also, I think one thing that we've talked about is the fact that in order to secure a person in this position, they need to see some type of longevity and some type of future. And many times with a one-time, they don't have that security. So she's really looking to capture someone that will still stay with OAR for the long run.
Mike Sigler.
I think this is a good program. I mean, it's really early in the program. I'm not really sure why we would move it to permanent. I mean, we're kind of testing it out to see if it works, and I think that's a great thing to do. That's kind of why I want it to be one time instead of Target as of yet. And then if it works out great this year, fantastic, and we make it, Target. But, I mean, there's very little data as to how this is actually working yet. So.
Ann?
Just wondering, as a compromise, could we make it one time for
3 years.
Or 1 year. You can't do that?
That would be
already one time for 1 year.
It's already that.
Oh, the Target. Well, I'm just also looking at, they're doing really important work, and that for the most vulnerable populations, they're doing it at a place and a time that it really needs to be done. So I'm just looking at, as far as the folks doing this also don't get paid a lot of money. The benefits aren't that great. So if this is one thing that they could have is security, that their job is going to be there, then that's something, Shauna said, this is not going away, and this is, I think it's really needed.
Let me follow up on that and say we have a $50,000 OTR recommended in the budget. The amendment that's on the floor tonight would change that to permanent target increase. If you wanted to change it to a different model, let's say 3 years, you would need to move an amendment to the amendment to make that change. So I got a lot of hands up, but I just wanted to clarify that. I think I've got Henry next, then Anna, then Martha, then Amanda.
I haven't had any.
Sorry?
Some people have already spoken. All right.
Henry?
Who does this work? Who does the case manager work now?
Well, we all share case management, but the one that focuses on case management for parolees is a formerly incarcerated individual who's been with us now almost 2 years, who is exceptional. I really hope that she'll stay on, and I do everything I can to make sure she'll stay on. She's really quite exceptional. She understands. She's walked in those shoes. And so she has real life experience, and she's no monkey business. She really is pretty strict. I'm kind of scared of her, so I avoid her.
Let's go to Amanda.
I don't
know my hand.
I was next.
Anna, okay. I'm sorry. I got myself confused.
No, that's okay.
And let's do Anna, then Martha, then Amanda.
Then Leslin. Leslin, not Amanda.
I don't see Leslin's hand.
I want to make
sorry.
An amendment.
Sorry.
I want to make an amendment.
We'll go right down. We'll just come right down. Anna?
I'd like to propose an amendment to change the request that is to go to target instead to be a 3-year one time.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Discussion on that amendment. Martha.
Yeah, that was going to be my motion, I think. We do this a lot. I think 1 year, one time is really thin ice to try to hire somebody, but three, I gotta tell everybody it's maybe not a secret that even if you're in target funding, it doesn't mean it's guaranteed forever. So, I think 3 years is a stable enough idea to be able to hire somebody. And I think it's a great idea. I'm willing to do it. Now, even though we haven't, the original plan for Endeavor House was people coming out of our own jail, not from prison. But I understand that that's a sort of fluid population, fluid definition, and I think that the parolee population, it's beneficial to all of us to support them better than New York State parole does. For example. So 3 years one time is, I think, a good idea.
On the amendment, who else wants to speak on the amendment? Want to vote on the amendment? Amending the motion to change this from target funding to a one-time 3-year funding. All in favor? Any opposed? That's unanimous.
Congratulations.
So now that's the main motion. Further discussion on that? Ready to vote? All those in favor? Any opposed? Okay.
Thank you.
Now you've got another one?
Yeah.
22.
Number 22.
All right. Let's see. That's been moved by Anna Kellett. Anna, you want to move that?
Yep, moved.
You moving that?
Yep, absolutely.
Is there a second? Seconded by Shauna. This is to change the funding for college initiative upstate from one time to target funding, $88,000. Anna?
Just to introduce my thought process on this, this has gotten one time for 2 years. I know the maximum that we do is 3 years. I recognize that we are probably at a 99% chance of making it target next year or this year. I'm looking at the list this year.
the total amount that we have in our OTRs recommended for a target, which is rather low, much lower than I've seen in the last couple of years. And in light of the unexpected savings that we've had, it seems logical to move this one that we will probably move anyway into target now and open that door next year for other things that we want to consider. So that was part of my logic. Another piece that people have mentioned is data or statistics that, you know, want to see some hard numbers on this. But that was actually presented in Health and Human Services. When they presented, they have worked with David on this, with the RBA system, and they've come back with some pretty solid statistics. So I think it's at the point where we've got the numbers that we're looking for. It has made an impact. The quality of the impact, even if the numbers are not in the hundreds yet, is pretty profound, as some of our legislators can attest. So that was my logic.
Martha was next, I think, then Deborah.
I would like to move to amend this. I agree with the idea in a sense, but I would like to suggest, I would like to move to make this half target and keep half of it as one time for one more year, sort of give us a, you know, ease into the target funding side of it so that we're taking half of it now. Propose to take half of it next year as target. So if that is... So it's 44,000 as target and 44,000 as one time.
Is there a second to that amendment to the amendment? Fails for lack of a second. All right, back to discussion on the main motion. Deborah.
So I agree that this is has been so far a very worthwhile project. And I understand that we'll consider how we want to fund it for the long term next year. I don't see any reason to jump on the train and fund it as a target this year. A lot of things can change in a year. And I also don't think it's like we got some big windfall, because whatever gains we've made from people withdrawing their OTR requests, or from a lower percentage of increase in health insurance or pensions, we have more than gotten hit with in having to hire a new contractor for the homeless shelter. So I will oppose any effort to make this more than a one-time. I think it should just stay where it is until next year.
Dan?
I'm going to pass, thanks.
Anyone else? You ready to vote on the motion? The motion is to make it target. And so a vote yes is to change it from one time to target. All those in favor, please raise your hand. One, two, three. All those opposed? Everybody else?
Three ayes,
and 11 noes. I think we're all here.
I think it's a three ayes.
Oh, three ayes again. Please raise your hand. It's Shauna and Anna and Ann. So that fails to change to target.
Should we do the other HSC? Kathy's here.
Yes. Kathy Slaughter. You've got two, I think.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to 13 first. Either Henry or Dan want to move this?
I want to pass on this one for now.
Okay. Dan?
Meaning we don't want to move this resolution, this amendment at this time.
All right.
Sorry, we probably should have.
Is anyone else interested in moving this at this time? All right, we'll take it out. We'll go over then to... What number?
23.
Okay, this is Anna, you brought it forward. Do you want to move it?
Yep.
Anna's moving it, seconded by Henry. This is succession support, one time, $3,000 to support director search, $12,000 for 12 months transition support from Kathy Slaughter to new director. It's $15,000 one time. Discussion. Anna?
I'd love to let Kathy give us a rundown of this logic.
Sorry, what the money would be used for? The 3,000, and frankly, I don't have a real good handle on this, would be used for the expenses for a transition. We would probably hire someone to run the process so that it was a thorough process, and any expenses that would be incurred by either bringing people in or helping people with expenses for that. As I said, we've had the HSC has had two directors in 26 years, so we don't do this a lot, so we might be learning stuff. The other is because of the nature of the work we do tends to be very seasonal. There are certain things that are done each time of the year. I tried to figure out how the best transition would be and thought that month to month, being able to meet with a new director for a certain number of hours each month as we enter into a new process would possibly make a lot of sense. Also, it depends on who it is, the director. If we just make it funny, if we don't use the funny, we just give it back.
I just wanted to add one of the conversations that we had. I definitely have sort of pushed Kathy on this one because I have sat through on the board of HSC, and I cannot impress upon you enough. I know Martha sat on that board for a very long time before me. The amount of programs they have is crazy. The amount of agencies they support, phenomenal. The amount of information in your head, Kathy, is overwhelming.
We have 25 separate programs.
Yeah, so it will take time to transition, and I specifically appreciated that you reached out to Joe Mariani and got his input, and this was his recommendation back to you. And I trust
Joe. Put this together. So.
I trust Joe on that. So anyway, thank you.
Leslie.
I hope Joe is watching because he needs to mind his business.
Okay. I do have to say, I don't want Joe to get... He did not tell me what numbers to put in. He said, make it a package. That's all he said. During lunch.
With this succession thing, and Mr. Chair, I'm just asking for a caucus so that I can organize my colleagues in a protest vote. We're not doing this. I don't know where you think you're going.
I think we ought to bribe Kathy to stay.
Martha.
I'm just asking if he got that. Yeah. If we vote against this, does this mean you won't leave?
Possibly, but I'm wrong. No, actually, it doesn't.
No, I
moratorium.
It makes a lot of sense.
All right, we're ready to proceed. The motion on the table is to add a one-time over target of $15,000. So this is new money. Not in the recommended budget to do the transition at the Human Service Coalition. Ready to vote? Those in favor?
Mm-hmm.
Are there any opposed?
Just saying.
Thank you.
Kathy, you're awesome.
Martha.
Before you go away, Kathy, Law New York is one of the agencies, and I don't see Greg Thomas here.
Right.
Law New York is under HSC review, so I wonder if I could move that one.
Which number is it?
Number 12.
Number 12.
Number 12. It's 3 years one-time funding for paraprofessional staffing for early intervention support services to prevent homelessness.
It's been moved by Martha. Is there a second? Seconded by Ann.
So it's 40,000.
$40,000
for 3 years.
It's a how many years?
3 years.
3 year, multi-year, $40,000. 3 years, one time. Discussion. Martha?
Well, just to say that Law New York does a tremendous amount of work with attorneys and support staff helping people who are facing imminent deadlines for applications or in court, but they don't have the bandwidth to help people before they get to those emergency deadlines. And this is, so working with Greg, and Alicia Plotkin came to the Housing Committee and talked about the 250 or more people per year who get evicted in Tompkins County. And as the HHS committee just heard earlier this afternoon, evictions are expensive for us, for taxpayers. And very often we can do kind of that, put the finger in the dike at the right time. And I think this is an opportunity with an agency that really knows how to do this, and again, testing it for 3 years and with reports back to see how it's going.
Anne?
Thanks. I just also wanted to add that helping folks before they are, to avoid them being homeless, I think is a social responsibility that I think if we can help for a small amount of money, I think we should do it. Hearing stories about folks who don't know their rights, or just sometimes a letter or a little bit of advice could help them to be able to stay in their home, I think is worthwhile.
Deborah Dawson.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
If we give an agency, say, $40,000 a year, and it's a not-for-profit, it's an independent agency, are we allowed to tell them how to use it?
Yes.
Yeah, we do that. They're an agency that already goes through our process. So, right, in the contracts we sign, it's for specific services.
So we can be reasonably confident that that will be where it goes. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Henry?
So if they are looking for a paralegal but find a lawyer to do the job, can they do that?
Sure.
Oddly enough, they did that last year. Yes, they did. Yeah.
Also, I mean, they also have two AmeriCorps interns for this office, I believe, to do this. I mean, I know it's not a paralegal, but they do have other people to help with this project.
Martha.
Yeah, I talked to Greg, and he said, I think an earlier description that I sent around that he drafted sort of said, had a particular position, and basically he then, on revising it, asked that it be a little bit more open-ended. Paraprofessional staffing is sort of the idea, indicating he doesn't propose to hire a lawyer for $40,000. His idea is a lower level of skill and training. He can get more hours for the $40,000, but I think the point is we're not going to be overseeing his hiring process. If he finds somebody who wants to work for almost nothing with better skills, that's up to him. And I think it does interface with the AmeriCorps staffing. But again, this is really to beef up their capacities beyond what they have.
Anne?
I also wanted to add one of the reasons, and I don't know what the percentage is, but one of the reasons that folks often become homeless is because of discrimination. So, for instance, if they have a physical disability, it's a landlord might look at, well, if I get rid of this person, then I don't have to make those reasonable accommodations. And then there's, of course, other types of discrimination.
Sean.
My question is, will this be an allotted amount of $40,000 and then they would bill up to $40,000, or is this an amount to take care of all of the legal needs for everyone that walks through their office?
This is going to take care of everybody's problems. Now, Kathy,
I think that they were going to combine this with some other funding they had, and they felt that they could get a full-time paralegal. I think to answer Henry's question, too, is you know, and there'll be some work that they will need a lawyer to do. Some will be done by the paralegal. But I think he felt that, I don't know if we were specific about the numbers he thought the person could do, but he felt that they would be able to get to people a lot sooner and avoid the evictions that they just couldn't do before because of the time frame that they were working with.
And then my second question is if we could actually evaluate the numbers this time next year to see how many people are actually using the service. Because if only three people are using the service and we've allocated $40,000, then we might need to rethink that.
Right. And we do have numbers for this year, so we do ask those questions when they go through the review process. What, you know, who are they reaching?
Go ahead, Martha, then I want to speak.
To add, Greg told me that, in a sense, they don't keep track of the people that they turn away that they can't help. So in a way that they don't have a baseline, maybe they have...
Well, they know how many they're able to help this year, and that should be able to expand because they're going to be able to help people earlier under that same. They just don't have the capacity to do more than they're doing right now with what they have, the staff they have.
Right. Well, they will maybe send somebody to DSS. But this will also help with public benefits if somebody is... Sometimes somebody becomes homeless because they don't realize that they could have gotten X, Y, or Z support. So this person will help walk them through that process, too.
I'm a little reluctant here, and I'll tell you why. I think one of the best processes that this legislature put together was the Human Services Coalition, in which before that, all the little agencies would come to the county asking for funding, and they would bring all of their good arguments for that. And it was very time-consuming, at the very least, but also very, very difficult to weigh them and to understand at the legislature level, you know, whether each was doing the job that they needed to do or there was duplication or other things. So the Human Services Coalition, led by Kathy ever since I can remember, has done the wonderful job of vetting these requests for us. So I see this as coming to us a little outside of this process, I don't know whether it's being recommended by the Human Services Coalition or not, but I don't want to see us get into a situation where we're having these agencies that need a little more money just keep coming around the HSC. Anna?
I just want to add one of the things that's really important. This year, for the first time, Martha put together a housing committee, and we've been able to really target in a way that we haven't been able to in previous years because PDAC is one of the most crammed agendas of any committee, and anybody who's been on it can attest to that. And so I've learned so much more about housing this year than I ever knew previously because of the presentations that we've been able to have. And one of the ones, if anybody has read the book Evicted, stimulated this for me. And then Martha brought in speakers to talk about the condition here. That's a countrywide synopsis. But to understand viscerally what's happening here in Tompkins County was quite profound. So it's new information. It didn't fit into the budget process, but that Martha did reach out to Kathy and started the process once we knew it was there. Sometimes information comes in after and it doesn't fit exactly into the process, but I think it fits into the vision and mission of the work that we're doing and the work that New York Law does that we've been supporting. So I don't know if Kathy wants to add to that.
No, it's, I thought of that. So there's my, you know, my review committee hat, and then there's my continuum of care hat, where they kind of did collide a little bit on this one. It came in after the review committee process. That is true. So this is more the continuum of care hat. So they look similar, but...
No way.
Which you also oversee.
Which we are also the lead agency for the continuum of care.
Could someone explain a little more what early intervention in eviction looks like? I mean, you know, there's an eviction notice. That's clearly eviction time. Just a little like, how would someone know to go to this agency? I'd like some, a little more information.
Who wants to speak to that?
Let Martha go.
Martha?
I'm not positive how people find Law New York, although I think the Office of Human Rights sometimes sends them there. Maybe 211 might send them there. 911, maybe. No, 211, the phone service that the coalition runs. You know, if you need help with housing, that's a place to go. Early intervention, it's not, you know, like your baby isn't smiling or something. It means that you're getting behind on your rent and you're having trouble with your landlord. And maybe you have a complaint, the furnace is gone and they're not, and there's a dispute. And you're like, oh, my God, what do I do? Maybe if you knew you had some rights and, you know, this office can help people with it, you're not facing eviction this minute. But if you had help before that crisis moment, and this is what Law New York could do if they had this bandwidth, then that forestalls that process. It keeps you from getting to that crisis point because, you know, you've gotten the help that you're entitled to. You've got, whether it's, you know, help from social services, where a lot of people say, I didn't know I was eligible for housing assistance. And, in fact, based on your income, you are. And, or it's that, you know, I didn't know that there was a fair hearing process on my Section 8 application, whatever it is. There are all these things that the bureaucracy is, you know, is tough.
Well, I'm still trying to understand. So I'm behind on my rent. How is an attorney going to help at that point? Or if it's a Section 8, like you were saying, then you are a DSS client. Wouldn't they know about the hearing process? I'm trying to understand what this person would actually do. How would someone know to get to Law New York, and why a lawyer at that moment or a legal?
I've got Anna and Anna. Let Martha.
So I'm going to give you an example. So getting the word out, you know, we're going to have to work on that, and, you know, different avenues, also maybe through CDRC. I'll give you an example. Years ago, I was here for only a few years, and I was living out in the country in an apartment, and the water was not good, and we started getting sick. So it was a private water supply. And so we withheld our rent for a month until it was fixed. Well, it wasn't fixed, and our landlord wouldn't give us any information about the health department. We called the health department, but then they wouldn't give us the information. It had to come through the so we didn't know if the water was fixed. We were still sick. And so then our landlord gave us these eviction notices, papers that weren't, I guess you have to go, I don't even know the whole procedure, but it wasn't the correct papers, but just gave us, and so I didn't know, young person, and so I wound up struggling to try and find a place to live and really found a really substandard place to live because here's my landlord with first and last month's rent and my security deposit. And so we just ran, not knowing, not having any, not being able to afford legal advice, and then we were stuck in a horrible apartment, me and my roommates. And then also the landlord, then we did hire a lawyer, which so it's because we couldn't get any, he would refuse to give us any of our money back, thousands and thousands of dollars, which we lost that because we had to hire a lawyer. So just somebody to go to for advice during some of those times to know, is it legal, for instance, what your landlord's doing?
Anna?
I think this is the key question. It's a great question. I asked the same question to Brian, so I'll give you his answer since he's not here. Kathy, and, you know, please add, because she was also there when he gave us the response. What he said was specifically a paralegal, that it would start with, right now what they have is someone will come in and it'll be 3 days of the eviction. And he'll have to, and he throws his hands up and he says, I can't intervene at that stage. It's too late in the game. You can go to DSS. We can maybe get you in the shelter. That's about all they can do. What he talked about is coming in a lot earlier, and in the beginning it would be a bit of case management. You know, here are some supports. You do have a case. here's some legal advice, here's information you can get from DSS if you, whatever, if there are issues in the house, you do have your rights, here are your rights, making sure that they know them because most people don't ahead of time. Then moving into conciliation and representing them in conciliation if that's what's necessary. And then he said, ultimately, if they do have a case, then that paralegal could represent them in administrative court. So he talked about those three steps, all of which currently don't exist.
Both of those examples you gave, you've gotten eviction notices already.
So no, not necessarily.
You just said 3 days to eviction. You said
have a legal one.
No, I said it doesn't work in the case where you've already gotten the eviction notice. What I'm saying is there are a lot of cases where a landlord will say, get out. They have not gotten an eviction notice. They haven't gotten anything. They have a threat. And so a lot of times, like say if someone has Section 8, they might leave because they're worried that they're going to get a bad review and they'll lose their Section 8, for example. So they don't necessarily ask at all what their rights are. And you would be surprised what they were saying. What he was saying is how many times people leave without that eviction notice. And it's those cases that could all be prevented. And it's a significant number. So it's before the eviction notice.
Yeah, the question is how are they going to find Law New York? The fact is they already find them. Greg is talking about hundreds of people a year who call Law New York or walk in and ask for help, and Law New York doesn't have staff enough to help them. They're already getting people in the door. However, all the ways that people find them, they're showing up, but Law New York has to just say, we're sorry, here's a phone number, try somebody else.
So I think the thing that resonates with me more than anything else is often it's not because the tenant did something wrong. And maybe I shouldn't talk about this because I get pretty emotional. I think of Julia Diane Sam, city councilwoman, strong, stellar person, who, because the landlord was required he wanted to rent to her and was required to put in a handicap accessible ramp that met code. And he didn't want to do this. He said, I put a ramp in there already, so if you can't work with that ramp, then move and get out. You know, it's not because she did something wrong, but it's because he had the wrong specifications for the ramp. And so where does she turn to get support and legal advice in a case like this, if you can't afford to hire an attorney? So often it's not because, you know, I didn't pay my rent and so I'm getting evicted. That's when I get the eviction notice and you know, that's my fault. A lot of times, a lot of the people who I think make those phone calls are people who are facing things like I mentioned for Diane, and I haven't even told the whole story. That's just a snippet of what was being experienced. He said, I did what I was legally supposed to put in a ramp. It wasn't regulation, and it was hard for her to maneuver. And you see, he said, well, then get it. So she did go to, it was Neighborhood Legal Services at that time, because that's who she could afford to go to, and was able to get the kind of representation before he actually said, that's it, here's your notice, I don't want to deal with you anymore, get out.
Okay, we're ready to bring this up to a vote. All right, so what's on the table is the over target. That's number 12, $40,000, 3 year one time for the paraprofessional staffing at Law New York. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4. That passes.
Thank you.
I know you've gone past this, but may I say something real quickly?
Sure.
You mentioned about the Human Services Coalition process. Ye old historian here remembers that often we do go outside of that process because things come up, pass, because they do the budget real early so they can get the reviews in. And then there are things that come up, and we get that. I remember it was just 2 or 3 years ago, maybe 2 years ago, we did something similar with this agency when we were dealing with people who were looking for certificates of relief, whatever that terminology is.
folks coming out of prison on trying to get their records together and expunge and so on and so forth. We did something very similar because it was a need that came looming at that time that was outside of the process. So I hear you, we like process, but sometimes we do have to do that because of what comes up. Okay.
Shauna?
I was wondering if we could actually go to number 19. I have Kathy from the Community Dispute Resolution Center here. Number 19.
This is for the Office of Human Rights?
Yes.
Okay. You want to move that, Shauna?
I would like to. Thank you.
Is there a second? Seconded by Deborah. This is a new over-target, one-time funding to pay for conflict coaching services from CDRC for OHR clients, $50 per hour estimate, two times one-hour sessions per case. It's $5,000 one time. Discussion. Shauna?
So we actually met with CDRC, Henry and myself and Jonathan and Reverend Ken last week. And we currently have a contract with CDRC to do our mediation. And it's one thing that I don't think OHR has really been utilizing, so it was nice to meet with them so that they can realize that's something that they can use. But another thing that was mentioned by Kathy at CDRC was there's something called conflict coaching that she thinks would also be helpful for people that are going through the Office of Human Rights. So I'll call Kathy here.
Hi. Thank you for having us here. Conflict coaching, I'm going to have Francie Saunders, who is our program director for our conflict education programs.
Hi, thank you so much. I've prepared a couple pages, and I'll just share that information if it would be helpful. I have duplicates to pass around for folks. Is that something that I should do now, or do you want me to just talk? Speak, okay. So let me tell you what conflict coaching is. Conflict coaching is a one-on-one process where a conflict coach helps a party manage conflict more effectively. And the coach and the party develop an understanding of a conflict. So it's a conflict, not many conflicts. And then explore interaction strategies and or interaction skills. Throughout this process, the party is in control of the decisions that are made about their conflict situation. So, who is a conflict coach and how can they help? A conflict coach has received formal training in conflict communication and conflict management. The coach is committed to listening to others and helping them apply insights and new skills to their conflicts. The coach's foundation in theory and research-supported knowledge prepares them to offer insight and guidance to the parties about which strategies have the best chances to secure a particular outcome. A conflict coach gives guidance and direction, but the party always retains the power to make decisions about what will happen in their conflict. Who is a party and how do they benefit? A party is someone who is referred to us or seeking assistance from a conflict coach to handle a conflict more constructively. A party often benefits from sharing an explanation of their situation, responding to carefully crafted questions, and consequently seeing their position through fresh eyes. For a party, the value of conflict coaching is in the development of strategy to move forward and in the identification of skills for putting that strategy into action. And I'd be happy to discuss also what that process really looks like for somebody who's participating in conflict coaching. Okay. So this process, I'm sorry, did you want
to? I was going to say we can see if we get questions on that.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Questions? Deborah.
So is the party who gets coached the claimant or the complainant? It's not staff of OHR.
So ideally what we had considered was that anyone that walks through the doors of OHR can either file a grievance or this special service can be made to them.
It also, so this service would work directly with either someone who might face eviction or discrimination, whether it be in the workplace, whether it be through housing, to actually try and resolve that with the person. They would use their coaching skills to talk through the situation with the person and then come up with a plan. The actual resolution itself would actually be gathering the two people in a room and trying to work through the situation.
Can I just ask, how is this going to be different from what I think some of us are envisioning OHR doing as far as mediation and has done in the past?
OHR is not actually doing mediation at this time.
Okay.
Yeah,
in the past. Let's go to Anna, then Henry.
I asked Shauna a similar question and also talked to Jason about it. And the answer I got, you know, totally valid, is that there are a bunch of OHR offices in the state that do provide it, but they provide it by contracting it out. So the question is, you know, yes, we could do it again. I think that it is something absolutely the department should do again, or we could contract it out. Either way, it's an option, but I think that this is a valid option and it has precedent.
Henry, then Leslin, then Deborah.
Yes, and this, and the conflict coaching is really not for mediation. I mean, it's somebody who the other side will mediate with them, or they just need, they have an issue that is not a viable human rights claim, but they can be coached on how they should prepare their arguments in their dispute. And so really it's just to help, it's like an alternative to help them to resolve their dispute, but without bringing another party in.
And it's not conciliation.
It's not conciliation.
Okay, Leslie?
So I'm struggling with this one. Hi, Kathy. CDRC is my fifth love. I've been mediating for that agency for well over 20 years and also a trainer with the agencies. But I'm struggling with this because if the Office of Human Rights has not been using the contract that we have for mediation services, I don't understand how this is going to go over. How are they going to get clients to then go do something different and do it for themselves? The reason people come to the third party is because they can't do this for themselves and they don't feel that equipped, so regardless of the training or the coaching. So I'm struggling with understanding or even envisioning how this is supposed to work.
I can answer
especially
that.
If we're not using it, what we have now.
And that's a valid question, and I can answer
close
it.
Close to the microphone, please.
Sorry. And it's a valid question. Conflict coaching is just one person. So a lot of people who come in and they have a grievance with their landlord or their employer, that other person doesn't want to mediate with them. So there's nothing to mediate, but they still have an issue. It may not even be a legal issue, but it's something that's not right. Using conflict coaching is going to give them the capability to reach, to see this program or this conflict, and what can they do? What skills do they have to stay in that workplace and be healthy? Or maybe recognizing, I have to move on. The same with the landlord or tenants. Conflict coaching is with just that person, with the conflict coach. And then it may move into mediation in other times.
Ask a follow-up?
Sure.
So, Kathy, what you do is not my issue. I understand what conflict coaching is. That's not my issue. My issue is how are we administering it from our end if we cannot do the contract we have now? That is my concern. And I actually really want to see what our comprehensive plan for this office is going to look like before I support this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good idea. I'm not saying it's not.
Deborah.
I think I'll pass.
Shauna.
So whenever we met with Reverend Ken last week, he did not seem to know that we were engaging in a contract with CDRC. So he had not been referring for mediation. So what we talked about was actually him having a pipeline and working directly with these folks so that whenever they did not fit into the very broad definition of harassment, if they did not, then he would refer them directly over to this organization. The one thing that's also important about this OTR is the fact that it's going to be done on a per basis time. The $5,000 is simply an allocation. So if they service four people this year, then it's going to be $400 out of the $5,000. So if we don't use it, we're not going to pay $5,000. We're going to pay for who walks through the doors and uses the service.
Martha?
So it's an up to $5,000.
Yeah.
The way I understand this is, and I agree, CDRC is a great organization. Key is what you said, is that mediation, the other party has to want to be there too. So it sounds like what this would do would be to help the complainant, like, with their own skills, with their own skills of figuring out, okay, what's my reaction to what seems like an intractable problem. And maybe sometimes the best reaction is move on, is figure out how to let it go. And maybe there are other choices. And so it's a matter of sort of strengthening the complainant and being able to respond effectively. Is that the idea?
Exactly.
And so we don't do that with people who come to OHR at this point. Okay.
Rich?
Shauna, does Reverend Ken support this?
He does, yes. Okay. I think also the reason why I did make it a one-time for this year is essentially we're going to have a new director in, and they'll be able to decide if this is working or not.
Okay. I guess I think it's worth the expense to put another tool in the toolbox for OHR here. Yeah, I will support.
Henry?
Yes, and the thing is that when someone comes into OHR and has a complaint, some of them may not want to file a complaint. They may just want to just resolve things. And so we'll offer mediation to them. And if mediation doesn't work, then we can offer coaching. And so those are the options. Or they can still file a complaint. So they have all the options available to them, whatever they want to do. But again, we talked to Ken last week, and we said, okay, when you meet with people, you know, you can offer mediation now. I'm not sure what he has, but again, we've encouraged him to do that.
Ann?
I support this because I like the idea of someone said, is, you know, putting another tool in the toolbox for OHR. And there are a lot of folks I know out in the community where maybe you might want someone to help you talk with, whether it's your landlord or whoever, but there's times where people just need to learn some of the skills themselves to try and be able to handle it themselves. So I support this.
Okay, we're ready to vote. So what we have in front of us is a over target new for $5,000 one time for OHR. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? Two opposed. That passes.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming and talking to us.
Mike, we have a couple of planning. Katie's here.
Well, I think we ought to take them next.
Okay, thanks.
Katie Borgella.
I'm looking at 21. And also there's a little one on number 7.
All right, let's take the little one first. Let's go in order. Number 7.
It's a really controversial.
You want to move that? It's your name on it.
It's a really controversial one.
Number 7.
In fact, it's so controversial, Kathy Covert suggested it. So it just moves our membership in the Cougar Lake Watershed Intermunicipal Organization, the IO. We're not quite sure why. It's in the legislature's budget. We want to move $900 into planning and sustainability, so there's no impact on anything. It's just the right bucket.
So does it automatically decrease administration? that amount? How do we do what, yes. What happens?
Decrease legislature.
Decrease oh, it's in the legislature.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I thought you said administration. Okay. So it's one time. I'm sorry. It's target, $900.
So I would move it.
Moved by Martha, seconded by Deborah. Discussion on this biggie. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Okay.
Wait, I want to talk about this. That was a joke.
It's too late. And now the other one is 21.
You said it's numbered.
Yes, 21.
That is Dan, Amanda, or Ann. Who wants to move that? Amanda, is there a second? Seconded by Dan. Now, this is a $13,989 expense one time to fund the Advisory Board Priorities OTR Unique Natural Area Update by EMC. Plastic Shopping Bag Ban Materials by EMC. Clean Boating Map by Water Resources Council. Been moved and seconded. Discussion. Mike.
I guess I'm a little curious. I mean, did we take a vote to ban plastic bags?
No.
Nope. This is for education.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure why we're advocating, actually spending money to advocate for a position that we haven't actually taken.
It's education.
All right. I read the materials. I didn't find it very educational, but I'm curious as to why we're actually taking an advocacy position, like spending money to do that.
Katie, you want to speak to that?
I'm here to just try to explain any of these if I can. This really, Amanda should speak to it. These are passed through requests from the advisory boards that we provide support to.
All right. Amanda?
We have not passed a ban yet. This is through the EMC working on educating the public about plastic in general and a plastic bag ban. It hasn't been specifically identified. We've put out some materials, but it would be over the next 6 to 8 months of educating the public. So it's a small amount to get the group started.
Dan?
A couple of things I want to say. First of all, there are three separate propositions here. If anyone wants to peel one off, that's a perfectly legitimate move. Two thoughts. I mean, I hadn't spoken about this part with anyone before, but we could conceivably make the plastic bag section of this understood to be contingent upon, you know, approval by the legislature. We could do that. But I want to speak briefly to the UNA one. That's unique natural areas. And so these are several hundred natural areas in the county that we've identified, and they've been mapped for decades, but some of the maps haven't been updated in about 20 years. And new technology has emerged. You know, aerial photography is much better to make better descriptions where the boundaries should be. Plus, there have been some changes over time. Farmland has, you know, been added, been subtracted, etc. So we've been updating the unique natural areas maps for several years in batches, and this is the last batch. Thank you.
Anna?
And I just want to speak really briefly about the Water Resources Council. I spoke to Cynthia Brock, who is the champion, one of the champions of this, and she's on the board, just so people know what it is. Obviously, everybody knows about the constant fight we've had for decades with hydrilla, HABs now. The idea of this is to map, to help people understand safe boating, where landings are, where sightings are. The idea is that they have had a physical map that people can then laminate, or they were planning on laminating, and they can have them on their boats so that it will be accessible and not easily damaged. And then if they have enough funding, that they could also create an interactive map that they could update at any time to keep people informed about what's going on in the lake. So I thought it was a really easy win with respect to helping preserve our lake.
Martha next, then Mike.
So I'm going to support these, and I understand the plastic bag. So the UNA update is $49.89 out of this. The plastic shopping bag ban education is $1,000. The Bodie map is $8,000. So, I mean, these are truly one-time expenses, I think. So I think that's a completely legitimate thing to do and useful, and our advisory boards do so much work that, but I don't know, having to go fundraise for these kinds of products seems really not fair. So I'm just going to, since we mentioned Joe earlier, I want to say, because, you know, Joe always cut the youth services budget because he hated kids. Mm. So, Jason, you funded a lot of, not true. You funded a lot of one-times, but you didn't fund this one, so you must hate the environment. Is that why?
It's either that or advisory boards, one or the other.
Uh-oh, okay. Was there any particular reason?
Simply, this is, I think it's an advisory board to the legislature. Those are your advisory boards. I felt it's a decision best made for you. That's simply why.
Okay. Yep. Well, then I say we should do it.
Mike?
Thank you.
I'm not going to move to separate because I don't think it'll pass, but I would like to make the $1,000 for the plastic thing, bag thing contingent on if it does actually pass the legislature. I mean, my rationale is, you know, I would advocate for a lot of stuff. I think that people in the Ithaca City School District should vaccinate their children. But, you know, I'm not asking for $1,000 to actually promote that. So we could go ad nauseum on things that we want to promote as our personal whatevers. So if the legislature moves ahead and wants to pass that, I mean, I'm obviously against it. I'll argue against it again. I don't think I'll win that. But if I do, great. If I don't, well, then sure. If you want to spend $1,000 to make people feel better about it, then I guess you guys can do that. But that would be my that's what I would move as an amendment. So.
Amanda?
Okay, but was that a motion?
There's a motion, and I seconded
Sorry,
it.
Sorry, was there a motion there? I didn't hear it.
To amend.
Go ahead. Say it, restate, please.
I was just going to move that we make the $1,000 expenditure contingent upon if this legislature does actually pass it.
Is there a second for that amendment? Seconded by Glenn. All right. On the amendment. Discussion? Those in favor? Those opposed? We have three opposed, Amanda, Henry, and Shauna. So the amendment passes. That is a part of the proposal. Then let's go to Amanda.
Okay. So just to be clear, it is $1,000 for the educational materials. I'm not sure if that's what Mike said. But and I'm the liaison to the Water Resources Council, and I just want to add that some folks have been working on that map quite intensively for a long time, and they originally thought that maybe they could have someone in the group do the design themselves, and they realized to make it look like a really professional map that they would want to distribute to the community, they want to pay for design fees as well. It's not just printing. So it will end up being a professional-looking map, and I think it is worth $8,000.
Leslie.
I do not have anything to say. I was trying to second that.
Sorry. Guess I got a little confused.
That's all right.
I would say about the $1,000. It seems to me it ought to be in the solid waste department's budget and not in EMC's. They're the ones that do the publicity and the education of the public on the issues having to do with solid waste. But that's my opinion. Amanda?
Right. Well, this would be for education. These are educational materials.
Yeah, but I'm saying it ought to be not in planning, it ought to be in the materials management.
The EMC.
Not solid waste anymore.
Oh, okay.
Anna?
This is a question for Jason.
Yes.
My understanding is that it is a pass-through, so it would go into the EMC's budget, correct? Mm-hmm. And the comment that if we're putting it in contingent and the ultimate decision is that that the EMC would work with solid waste, for example, and solid waste would lead the charge on that, for example, if that were something that was decided, Mm-hmm. Not saying that is. Can it go either way? I mean, if we put it contingent, then we decide that then.
I mean, it
stays with EMC, then EMC will do it, and if we ultimately...
I understand that it has to come back to the legislature because it's put in the contingent budget, so...
But it was being put in the contingent
yes.
as a fund that could go either way, or does it have
that
to
determination can be made at that time.
Okay, thank
yeah.
that's what I wanted to know. Thank you.
Dan, then Ann.
So I didn't understand that amendment to be to put in the contingency budget. I understood that that initiative would not be taken unless contingent upon approval by legislature. So I didn't hear the word budget put into that amendment. I didn't understand that when I voted.
Michael, what's your intention?
I mean, we have to put it somewhere.
I don't want to. I'm not saying we should put in contingent budget. Just the opposite. It sounds like they're discussing it as if it is in the contingent budget.
Let's have Kathy Covert reread the motion as that was passed.
The motion was to approve the $1,000 for plastic bag ban contingent on passing the legislature, not to put the money in the contingent fund.
Thanks for the clarification.
Ann?
Thank you. So I'm wondering if this, for the money for the plastic bag ban education, is that something that was coordinated with the solid waste department? Because I guess now that was brought up, I'm kind of wondering why they're not.
Ann, would you, or Amanda, do you want to answer that?
Yeah, no. This was through the EMC. The EMC often asks for, or any advisory board can ask for a little bit of funding to do a specific project. And so because it's the subcommittee of the EMC has been working on this project for months, we went through the EMC, thus through the planning department. The EMC reports to planning. So I've talked to Barb, but they don't have an advisory board. So there isn't.
What would be an advisory? Martha?
Page 1 of Section 2 says that our 2019 recommended budget is $186 million. So I'm going to say this is...
A lot less.
We are true to some form, as we've done in the past, where the smaller the allocation, the more we talk about it. But... I'm not saying that's not important, but I also do trust
we can figure it out.
Barb Ekstrom and EMC and Katie and Jason to figure out how to spend the money if we pass a ban. Just saying.
Katie just told us it's just a pass-through.
Yeah.
I would say that when this was proposed to us, we did talk with Barb Ekstrom and talked with Amanda and the team there at EMC to make sure that they understood that whatever gets prepared needs to be kind of blessed by solid waste or materials management before being issued.
Yo, y'all, can we vote?
I was gonna
call the question.
I have a call the question.
Come on,
give me
your
faith.
Deborah has moved to call the question. Is there a second?
Okay.
We'll proceed to vote on calling the question. All those in favor of calling the question, raise your hand. Any opposed? We have one opposed. The question is called, which is to fund the one-time items in this over target number 21. With the amendment which said that the plastic bag education money would not be used unless the legislature had acted on the plastic bag ban to, I guess, approve it. Okay, ready to vote? All those in favor, raise your hand. Are there any opposed? We have two opposed, Glenn and Henry. That passes. Okay. Now we're going to go back to the top. Before that, I had something I intended to do at the beginning, and I wanted to ask Kevin McGuire if he'd give us a little tutorial about the active figures at the top of the screen. and what happens as we are changing along.
I'm happy to, Mike. So our point of reference is the 2018 adopted budget, because what we're, I think one of the key focal points for tonight is the year-to-year change in the levy, because you all set a goal that said we don't want to, back in April you said our financial goal would be to have a budget that is only 2.2% higher than the prior year. So the prior year data is here, the adopted budget. This is the recommended budget as it was presented to you the day after Labor Day. This is where we are now, and this is the variance or the change between the recommended budget and where we are now. When you all approve or don't approve or change an amendment, the changes that are enacted down here modify these numbers and these numbers here. So if you're watching your progress on the percent change on the levy, it's this cell right here that's highlighted. Currently at 1.65. As you'll probably remember from the discussion about the increase for homelessness and the decrease for savings, it was 1.65, which was the new sort of starting point that after, as a change over the 1.43 that was in the recommended budget. Any questions? I'm not sure if I've explained it well enough. To note over here, the assessed tax base as of August, I'll get an update from Jay probably for tomorrow night, median home value of 185, and the tax cap for 2019 calculated at 9.76.
So you're saying we should really sweat that $1,000 actually?
I don't make comments on things like that.
I doubt very much that the controversy had to do with the amount of the over-target rather than the subject of it.
Yes, of course. So that 1.65 change from the 1.43 was all Jason's doing. The things he forgot.
Correct. Again, I'm going to withhold comment on
it. I just want to know.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Liz.
Trying to make us look like the bad guy.
Yes, yes, that's what I did.
Better reporters when you need them.
Thanks.
Okay, I think we're moving next to number 8 on the list, which is for the History Center. Rich John and Dan Klein are proposing $20,000 as target. Change in existing OTR for the joint bookkeeping position between the History Center and the Historic Ithaca from one time to target and fund it. Rich.
This came up, and it turns out that the History Center and Historic Ithaca had been asking for OTRs each year, and surprisingly, they didn't fully understand our budget process. Hard to believe, but there it is, and the difference between one time and target. The position has been in place for 3 years, and that's why Jason called it out, I believe, was because we try not to run a one time more than three years. But the position has proved itself, and right now with the Tompkins Center for History and Culture, with construction underway, with a capital campaign on the way or underway, and the History Center really is going to be taking responsibility for a lot of the accounting and bookkeeping functions of the tenants that are going to be jointly residing in the Tompkins Center for History and Culture. This seems like something that we really want to make sure is in place, that somebody's there watching the money very carefully.
And Rich, I forgot to ask you, would you move it, please?
Well, I thought I had moved it.
Yep. Don't think. Seconded by Dan.
I move it.
All right, now it's on the table. Others who want to speak to this. Dan?
I just want to mention that the History Center really operates on a skeleton crew. They really do. They currently don't have enough staff, and their History Center is not open all the time. They just don't have a lot of people there. So there's no, this is not a bloated organization. This gives them a little extra to work with.
Others. Shauna Black.
I would actually support this as a one-time.
Is that an amendment?
That is.
I have an amendment to convert this $20,000 target increase to a one-time. Is there a second for that? Seconded by Mike Sigler. Discussion on the amendment. Martha?
So, Rich, you just said we've had it one time for 3 years? Okay.
Yes.
I'm going to support this target because I agree it's sort of more necessary than it was when we first approved it 3 years ago. I don't think I have to remind folks of some of the places where we've tried to do something on the cheap and like our money hasn't necessarily always been tracked as well as we had wanted it to or thought it was being. I think this is an investment. It really is a very, very lean staff, and I think we should support it.
I have Leslin, Anna, Deborah.
Do these two agencies get reviewed by the Human Services Coalition? Can someone remind me?
No.
So they're just separate agencies. I know the History Center, we've done the rent. This is something new. And Historic Ithaca doesn't either?
Hmm.
Does anybody know why not?
Not human service.
I think it's in our charter, too, isn't it?
Pardon me?
I think this organization's in our charter.
The History Center. Thank you.
I think so.
I don't have an answer for you, Leslie, and we can look into that. I think certainly with the History Center, when it was going back to when it was the DeWitt Historical Society, it has been there for a long, long time that's been funded. Others, I've got Anna, then Deborah.
Yeah, I just want to thank Rich and Dan for bringing this forward. Rich, I know you worked on this a lot.
This is on the amendment now we're talking about.
I know. I am not going to support the amendment was what I was going to say. I would like to see it go to Target. I know they're in the middle of a capital campaign. Rod is not leading that. He is leading the actual staff and transition and building. We have an entire team that's leading the capital campaign, people who are very good at it. And they're going to be juggling a tremendous amount over the next couple of years, not just this year. So I absolutely think that this is a more than just this coming year.
Deborah?
Thank you. It's no secret to most of my freshman class colleagues that I'm not real excited about the history of Tompkins County. I'm sorry. I'm much more interested in the 11th to 16th century in Europe. But I had an occasion to attend a social event this weekend with one of my favorite constituents, Dooley Kiefer. Mm-hmm. And duly impressed upon me the importance of safeguarding the considerable investment that we've already made in the History Center and in the endeavors that the History Center and the Tompkins, whatever the heck it's called, it is going to be making over the next few years. And she persuaded me that putting this in Target is a very important thing. So, Dooley, if you're watching, I will not vote for this amendment, and I will vote for the amendment as Rich presented it.
Ready to vote on the amendment. Henry, go ahead.
What's the argument, Rich, for voting for Target as opposed to one time?
Well, the position's been in place for 3 years.
Right.
We're pretty sure that the need for this bookkeeping service is not going to go away. And, in fact, I think it's going to become more critical because of the History Center carrying a lot of the bookkeeping responsibility for all of the tenants that are going to be in the Tompkins Center for History and Culture.
They're all going to be covering all the...
Well, not their internal bookkeeping, but, say, the Governance Council is going to be performing activities, including Jason and I have been talking about a licensing agreement, for example, for...
Virtual.
For virtual not-for-profits. What we're trying to do is to use the center as an incubator for new not-for-profits or small not-for-profits that have to operate on a shoestring. And the idea is that they're going to pay a nominal amount. They're going to be able to come in and use services in the center. So, for example, there'll be chargebacks for use of the copiers, maybe for conference rooms, for, you know, events, for coffee. I don't know. We don't want to keep track of that as the county. That's going to, I believe, fall to the History Center as the lead, the largest tenant at the Tompkins Center.
Public events, weddings.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. And I, one of my colleagues made the point that we are really becoming more closely aligned with the History Center through all of the activity we have going here. It really makes sense to me that we're making sure that they are watching their finances on a very careful basis. And that's not going to go away, so that's why I'm saying target.
Okay, so we're going to...
And I'd also add, thank you, Dooley.
We're going to vote on the amendment, which would convert this motion from a target to a one-time. All those in favor, please raise your hand. One. Those opposed. Everyone else. That fails. She's a lady with the courage of her convictions. Let's go to the main motion, which now it's back to $20,000 target. Ready to vote?
Uh-huh.
Those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That is unanimous. Okay, now we're going to number 9 for the Sheriff's Office. This is from Shauna, Amanda, Ann, and Deborah. And it is...
What's Deputy 6?
Isn't that taken care of by 6?
Oh, we zeroed it out. Never mind. I'm just going down the list. I didn't have a check mark on it. All right, let's go to number 11. County Administration, Martha Robertson. This is $10,000 to contribute funds to the Tompkins County Chamber's Live in Ithaca project. Or is that Live in Ithaca?
Live in Ithaca project.
Aimed at area workforce recruitment. It's a one-time $10,000.
So I would.
You want to move that?
Thank you, Mike. Yeah, I will move that. It's a great program. It's not just a.
Let's see if I get a second. Seconded by Anna.
So it's not just a new, very robust website that's in development. It's not fully done yet. But it also includes a sort of physical brochure, not just a website, but something to hand out that will really help, and some marketing to help people who are coming to the county. It's targeted for supporting recruitment of people working here, but it will be very useful for people who live here already, yeah. People who are looking for other jobs, for all different kinds of resources. And it's really a beautifully done so far, and it's going to be a very sort of elegant site for people that people will want to use to look all sorts of things up. So this is a chamber project. It is the Chamber of Commerce doesn't come to us for anything. They're part of the tourism budget. This is completely separate. So they came to Jennifer Tavares came to Jason back in the spring and showed it to him, talked about it, but there really wasn't any line. There's no category for the chamber, so they didn't get the notices about send in your requests. So, Jason, you want to add to that?
We had spoken about it maybe in April and May, and to be honest with you, forgot to mention to her to put this in during the budget process. Had she done so, I would have recommended it. It's a great program. What she showed me at that time has been developed even more. I think it's a great tool. It really also pushes, well, I think it's, you know, it says live at Ithaca. It's really pushing the whole county in terms of options and a real relocation resource and guide. So that was really just a timing issue on my part with respect to this request.
Anna?
You said what I was going to say. The relocation support is critical.
Yeah. Henry?
I was wondering, how does this differ from, like, Visit Ithaca website?
That's for tourists.
That's really for tourists. I mean, that doesn't tell you about school districts or, you know, where, what municipal governments are, you know, if you live here, even though your address is Ithaca, what municipality are you actually in or...
What school you would be associated with.
As I said, or yeah, what doesn't say anything about school districts. It's, you know, the idea is that when you... It could be for any, I mean, as I said, if it's for residents, too, if you are a renter and you decide you want to buy a home, you may never have thought about school districts before, or if you're looking for another job, these are just a lot of, there's a lot, it's a very rich resource for a lot of purposes.
I don't know why we can't hit the tourism money budget up for this. I think it's something that people from out of area are going to be looking at a lot.
It's really not tourism.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that. Knowing where you are when you get here and where you might live if you come here, I think could be. And the other thing that I think is that call it live in Ithaca for us as Tompkins County to spend the money on it. Why doesn't it say live in Tompkins County? Deborah.
Well, as someone who once relocated three times in less than 4 years for business, I can say that something like this is incredibly valuable. And given the concerns that I have, at least, about increasing our focus generally on creating jobs and workforce development and the fact that we are constantly being told by TCAD and the Chamber that one of the main obstacles to people setting up or expanding a business here is the lack of qualified workforce, I think that this would be money well spent. And I frankly don't expect Ithaca, the city of Ithaca, to do it. And as I think Jason pointed out, It's not, I mean, yes, you can say live in Ithaca because that's a little shorter and punchier than live in Tompkins County. But obviously this is the sort of initiative that benefits our entire county. So I will be supporting this.
Martha?
Yeah, I've seen the...
Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. I missed Glenn. Excuse me, Martha.
Why?
Glenn's turning red, so you know that.
My question is, why does it have to be titled Live in Ithaca? You just said school districts. You just said neighborhoods. You just said all these things that happened in Tompkins County. And if Tompkins County Chamber of Commerce is going to be putting out a brochure, it should be Live in or Live in Tompkins County. That's why I'm going to vote against it.
All right, then go to Martha.
Change the name.
I mean, look, we have the Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. I mean, the fact is every community is branded by its major city. I mean, it's a branding issue. I mean, when I go to NYSAC, one of my problems in remembering where somebody's from is I don't remember where Madison County is, but if you tell me the main city in Madison County, I'll know where it is, maybe. But, you know, I mean, but you know, it's a sort of just a human thing. It's not chauvinistic about Ithaca versus Tompkins County. It's just sort of when you want people to sort of recognize, especially people from somewhere else, recognize what you're talking about. You generally use the name of the major city. I suppose it's going to say Tompkins all over the thing. It actually, what I've seen already has tons of photographs and examples of outside the city businesses and resources and employers. So I think the feeling is going to be very much almost regional, even beyond urban. It's not urban. It's very much the whole county. So, look, I think this is a great initiative. The chamber's taking the lead on it. They're raising money. This is not the entire budget by a lot. They're taking the lead in raising money from other entities, businesses, et cetera. And I think that we can support this, and our residents and businesses will see a benefit.
We have Amanda Leslin, Ann, Shauna Rich.
City of Oneida. That's Madison County.
Madison County?
City of Oneida.
Okay, now I know. All right, thank you.
Okay, so this is a website and some sort of brochure.
You know what? Where's the... Jason,
it's
do you have...
website, marketing, and a handout.
Okay, right. So how is this website different from the Tompkins County website?
Oh, tremendously. It's very...
So we decided not to... Well, we never voted on it, but we decided not to put money into our Tompkins County website, but we want to put money into this website. Just pointing that out. I will not be supporting this.
Leslin.
Did you call on me?
I just did.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I don't know if you said Leslin or if you said, huh? No. That's all. I don't know why you're hating on Ithaca.
Miss
Leslin. You hate on Ithaca? I'm kidding. I still don't understand this, and I think I actually contributed information for it from GIAC, but I still don't understand it. It was the last minute thing that came to me. Deborah, you said something quite interesting. You said we are hearing from folks about the not having the quality workforce here. This is talking about workforce recruitment in the area. So if there's complaints that we already don't have a quality workforce here, who are we recruiting? Are we recruiting people to come in and live here? Is that what it is? So what does that do to people who live here who are looking for jobs? Like, I would just as soon see us be investing in workforce training. So if that's the argument that you're making, maybe that's not what you intended to say, but that's what resonated with me.
I think we can do both, Leslin.
So, you know, I just wanted to point that out. But I still don't understand this, and I did intend to call Dominic and get some more information. So if anybody can help me out, I might be convinced to vote for it. But stop hating on Ithaca.
Next I have Ann.
So I've lived in two major areas. One is the Ithaca area, and the other one is the Albany area. And when I'm here, I say I'm from Albany or I'm going to visit my family in Albany, but none of my family actually lives in Albany. I could go on and list all the different towns, and I don't say grew up in Watervliet or Loudonville, but people know that is Albany. And so when I first came out here, I actually did say to somebody, oh, I'm from Loudonville. Well, you don't say that. You say the biggest thing that they might know. And when I travel around the country and sometimes the world, people know Ithaca, or they say Cornell, you know, and that's what people know. So if people are coming to move here, they're not coming probably to move to the town of Ulysses or the Jacksonville Hamlet or Trumansburg or maybe even Lansing.
That's all they can afford.
We're going to talk later. But so I'm okay. I first had a hard time hearing not Tompkins County being included, but then thinking about it, that's the branding here. People want to come even if they're not going to put their business or live right in the city environment. This is the Ithaca area.
Rich?
I'll defer to Martha.
Well, I have Anna, then Henry, and then I have Martha.
I just wanted to point out that we have the city, but we also have the town of Ithaca, so this is just not the city. We're a little bigger than that. So just don't want us all to forget town of Ithaca. We got some reps there. The other thing that I did want to point out we're getting a little slap happy, is that in our experience in PDEC, when these conversations have come up, they were specifically talking about the biomedical industry and high-tech industries and education, and all three of those aren't necessarily going to recruit local because those people aren't necessarily here. I would point out, though, that they are hiring a person specifically for workforce development. So I agree with Deborah when you say, you know, the idea is to do both. But it doesn't negate the fact that a lot of the industries that are the highest or the largest industries in this area, and there's the highest demand, have told us specifically that they are having difficulty hiring. And I want to remind people of, for example, TCAT. TCAT went through years of trying to find people, and two of the candidates that they hired referenced the fact that housing was very difficult for them to find, the location, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That was a part of the process, I think, is key, and we don't want to necessarily restrain all those places from only finding people here locally. So there's a lot of pieces of this, and the last thing I'll say about the website is very different from the Tompkins County website in that its focus is explicitly for employees, for people coming here, transferring here, relocating, and resources that they would need, information specifically that they would need for that sole purpose. So, last point.
Henry.
Okay. I mean, we're talking about bringing in workforce people, but really, we know there's no affordable housing. We also know there's no child care here. And so we're putting up a website to attract people here who can't come here. And so that's one reason. Also, when I moved here back when, I looked online at schools. You know, I looked at Trumansburg. I decided I didn't want to live there. But I did look at those places online. I don't understand why you just can't, you know, enhance the Visit Ithaca site or whatever a little more. Just to include schools and, you know, I mean, people who want to live here are going to find realtors that are going to talk to other people about all these other information. I don't see why we need a website to do this. And also, I don't see who the market is really.
Martha.
So a couple of things. I live in Dryden, but my mailing address is Ithaca. That's true of people in Enfield. It's true of people in Caroline and Lansing. And I'm not sure, and Ulysses. So, you know, really. So, that's one thing. The other is, in terms of the county government website, maybe there should have been an OTR. Maybe it should have come through and come for a vote. I mean, I don't think that's really fair to say just because we didn't vote. I don't know what happened on NGO and what's happening with the county's website. So, and that's a very, very different kind of functionality, completely different than what this is talking about. But at any rate, I really honestly did not think this was going to be controversial. It's one-time funding, which is, while it's still taxpayer money, it's not a yearly commitment in any way. And only second to if Kathy thinks it's right, then we all do it. If Jason thinks it's right, we do it. So Jason was supportive of it, and it just came as a, you know, out of, right? I mean, you know.
No,
yeah.
I mean,
true. Now, listen, if this had shown up
yes.
under administration or some other way,
it wouldn't
have even, like, really risen to any debate. But let me just say, I'm responsible for maybe misfiguring this out and misanticipating these questions. If we can pull it, and I'll see if Jennifer can come tomorrow night, then... Or maybe Monday night. I will check with her and see if she can come.
All right, with the seconder.
Yes.
So I think these are fair questions, and let's see if Jennifer can help us out. Thank you.
It's now 7:35. Okay. Do you want to continue, or do you want to
no.
go back tomorrow night?
See you tomorrow night.
We've made quite a lot of progress tonight.
11 more to go.
Rich.
I did want to give my colleagues just a heads up. I am planning to add one more request to this list for a one-time funding to go into our contingency fund for a coordinator for the new mental health court. We had a presentation at Public Safety last week, and Judge Scott Miller explained where they were at with developing the court. Because of our different ATI initiatives, that alternatives to incarceration initiatives that we have underway, we would like to make sure this one dovetails properly with our other efforts. And so Frank Krupa is working on what he thinks would be necessary to properly support this. A couple things that Scott Miller said was that this is likely eligible for grant funding from the Office of Court Administration, but not in the first year. They have to get it up and running. Also, when it's up and running, they intend to apply to allow the town and village courts to refer to the mental health court. It's going to be cited in the Ithaca City Court, but it would be available to judges outside of the city as well. And it's a very different approach. There's one operating in Auburn, and where they have these up and running, they've been really very successful in keeping people in the court.
So I'm going to try to do that tomorrow night, and you can talk about it at more at length then. Martha.
Mike, I want to ask that we have three on the list already about cooperative extension, and there may be other amendments as people think about some things that Amanda just sent us the other day. There's been some conversation. There are potentially five separate issues. I would ask that even if we have a short meeting tomorrow night, that we plan on cooperative extension being for our Monday night meeting so that people have a chance to read the materials that Amanda sent and to maybe talk with Jason and talk with other board members, et cetera. I think that's a cluster of issues that's really complex and important.
Let me say this, and I hear what you're asking. In the past couple of years, we've completed after two meetings and not had to go to the third meeting. This would be guaranteeing the third meeting, even if we get everything else toward the end, and I don't know whether we will or not. So is that what the group wants to do, what Martha is suggesting?
Yes. And we don't know, because there might be other amendments that come through that we're not completed.
So you want to plan on a third meeting?
No dinner. Dinner on our own, Shauna and Deborah.
Yeah, I agree. If we can.
We have 12 maximum OTRs left. That's it.
Absolutely.
I'm just saying right
now. We could talk a long time on $1,000. We know that. Dan, you wanted to say something, too.
I did. I'm also intending to bring some proposed amendments to adjust the sales tax projection and the casino revenue projection. So I just wanted to announce that because it's a little different animal than the rest of these, and if you're unclear on what that means, or there are pros and cons to it, there are implications of it, I'm going to ask my fellow colleagues to try to get educated on that before the meeting. Thank you.
Amanda?
So in light of that, maybe some of us don't have time tomorrow to learn up on sales tax, and we would have several days until next week to people bring new things forward, and we have more days.
All right. Let me see hands who want to game plan for a third meeting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Those who, Dave and Glenn, okay, are you listening to me? I'm trying to get an idea how many people want a game plan for a third meeting.
Yeah.
Is that all right? All right, I think it's just a bare majority. So we will plan on that, as Martha has requested.
What was the decision?
We will have a third meeting.
We will. Okay, thank you.